Welcome to the Once Upon a Leader in Africa podcast with George Nudu. We invite you to listen to influencers and opinion shapers narrating their experiences from their leadership roles in Africa, from the world of business, community development, government, corporate, social enterprise, among others. We will glean from their good, bad, and ugly side of their leadership journey and be inspired to overcome adversity, to pursue success against all odds, to be a great leader, and many other lessons. Welcome to the podcast, and here's George Nudu.
Hello, George. How are you?
I'm very well. My name is George.
Yeah, you both have that name. Thank you so much for agreeing to be a guest on this podcast, Once Upon a Leader in Africa. So welcome very much.
I'm very honored to be in this discussion with you. I have been looking forward to it. Thank you.
Okay, then I will just jump into it. And George, what is your current leadership role?
My current role is the Group CEO of Davis & Chatliff Limited. The Davis & Chatliff is a big company, is the leader in our region in the water and energy solution. So we are in about 10 countries and growing. We have 1,000 people that we employ, and of course many others that depend on the solutions of the company. And our purpose is to improve lives, improve people's lives through provision of water and energy solutions across Africa. So my role is to nurture this company. My role is to communicate the vision of the company and to lead the team that is to deliver this vision and purpose to make the difference that we aspire to do for the African people.
Oh, wow. Quite a big role, huh? Thing that you have seen in other countries.
Yes, it is, and it's very interesting and growing. It's a very dynamic business, so we are growing all the time. And of course, particularly at this time in Africa, there are all sorts of challenges, as you would expect. There are currency issues in many markets. You know, some of the countries we are in are not very secure as well. But you know, we feel that our products are also needed there, even especially there, because that's where people need our interventions. And then we have drought, you know, in other places like Kenya has been faced with a long, long drought now. Incidentally, you know, you find that is interesting region where you find a severe drought in one area, and the others are, you know, have very arid areas as well. But like now, the Southern African area where we have Zambia, Malawi, Mozambique, a lot of rain for the last few months. So we've learned to live with this sort of disparate situation. And every time we find that one area is doing well and the other one may be having challenges. So the advantage of having a widespread business in the region is that, you know, you can accommodate peaks and troughs in the different markets by covering each area, covering the others. Yeah, so very interesting for me. And of course, you know, our products are technical products. So we're dealing mainly with the technical solutions. So a lot of the staff I've talked about will be engineers. There'll be technicians who are involved in installing the equipment, designing the solutions. It's not just installing of equipment, because first of all, it's to look at the need on the ground and decide this is how the need should be addressed, identify the components, even sometimes coming up with bespoke solutions to some of the issues that our customers face. And so we've got a lot of technical staff. We are hubbed in Kenya. The head office is Kenya, Nairobi. And so we've been setting up group shared services in Kenya, but I must tell you that in response to COVID, we discovered that even our group shared service doesn't need everybody to be in Nairobi. So we have now got our group shared services staffed from people all over the place. You know, we have staff in Zambia, Tanzania, Uganda, but working for other countries from there, all managed from centrally, from head office here. So that's how we have done. It's a very interesting job. We are a dynamic business, a dynamic company which grows and believes in continuous improvement. That is one of our key values, one of our core values. We have three values: integrity, quality, and continuous improvement, which we put in Latin words, altiora petro, meaning I seek higher things. Yeah, so to be involved in that for me has been very exciting. And I've taken over this role in the last May. That's just hardly a year ago. So as you can imagine, I'm still cutting my teeth on doing new things. But of course, I have been in the company for, this is now my 27th year. So as a finance person and systems person, I started as a chief accountant in the company, and then I grew to the finance director, and then I also took the responsibility for information management. So as I transitioned, I was for the last 16 years, I had been the finance director, also responsible for ICT. So that has enabled me to interact a lot with the people and to contribute to what the growth has happened in my own way. Thank you.
Wow, that's quite a journey, 27 years.
Exactly.
So when you're told we've given you CEO, what was your reaction? I'm just curious.
I think the one word I can say was surprise. I didn't expect it at all. Not that I didn't feel I would qualify or do it, but I was busy in my area, and the area was very committing and all that. I knew that we needed a transition, but the thought that I would be the one to take the responsibility hadn't occurred to me. So I was a bit surprised, but I normally take such situations with a very, very quick adjustment. When I get such information, is to say, fine, this is a responsibility. I don't look at this as a position myself. I don't believe in positions. I believe in responsibilities. When you are CEO or whatever, I refer to it as a responsibility. And immediately my mind got to work then to first of all assess myself and see how ready am I to do this, what needs to be done, and are there any gaps that I need to address. So I had some good time to prepare because I was given the information quite in good time, and I had a lot of time to work on my mental preparedness and even to work on some of the skills, skill gaps that I felt were needed. I had that preparation time, which was very, very good. So I am ready. It's there. It's happening. It's already, we are in the production now. Thank you.
Oh, wow. Congratulations. And I like what you say, just preparing and looking at some of the skills. So far, as you've been executing this work the last couple of months, what are some of the skills you've seen you've had to exercise to continue succeeding as a CEO?
I think the key skill to me for this sort of responsibility, and it's not really new with the CEO role, even in the previous role I was doing, the key skill is working with people. Because at the end of the day, as a CEO, I am not going to be the one to do everything. There will be salespeople, sales engineers doing proposals to customers. There will be, all different roles being done every day by different people in the company. And the only way I can ensure and I can claim to ensure that the objectives of the company are being met is to ensure that as those people at all levels, from the security person to the highest managers, as they execute their various roles, that they do it with utmost commitment and utmost energy and in line with our values and with the interest of all the stakeholders that are involved. Of course, there are many stakeholders of the business. So taking care of all those stakeholders, especially our customers, whom we are here for and who are the people we want to improve lives for. So that requirement, of people, of you to be able to lead the people and to encourage them and to enable them to provide an environment in which that sort of freedom, because I feel that commitment can only come when people are mentally free to exert themselves. Creating that environment, I feel, is my biggest challenge. And so I had to go back, and it surprises, sometimes you assess yourself and you feel maybe you have a weakness in this area, but when you go to the ground, you find that actually things are not as bad as you thought. So sometimes we under assess ourselves onto what we can do. I have, for instance, you look at some of the people and say, fine, I have peers, you know, people who we could say we were at peer level and have had and been reporting to me. And so one of the things that came up to my recognition at that time of that information is that now I have to be able to work with these people as people who are reporting to me. I have to go to adjust the peer relationships into reporting relationships. And I think, you know, being a leadership coach, you know, that's not an easy task. It can be mentally taxing, but I've had very good surprises from those people, from some of the people. And actually, let me say from all of them, you know, in the way our previous relationships, which were not very much intertwined, have merged and, you know, they have just morphed into a very good and positive, synergetic working relationships, which I'm very, very grateful about. I wouldn't say that is to my making, due to my own contribution, I don't know, but I would also attribute a lot to the attitude of these people and to our leadership, also to our board and the chairman. You know, the support I have received from everyone has been overwhelming.
What challenges have you faced, my friend?
Well, the challenges continue, but as you know, I started by talking about the tough business environment. Of course, you know, it's not just being the CEO and people, you've got to deliver, you know, you've got to be able to grow. The business has aspirations of growth. It needs to grow profitably and in a sustainable manner. And so, you know, the same challenges that face in the business in terms of how do you maintain your leadership, your market share, how do you maintain your competitiveness despite the fluidity of the market and the ability of many competitors to enter the market, especially as, you know, some of the areas we deal in will have very low barriers to entry. Those are some of the issues. And of course, the other challenge is you have very good people and just how to make them, to keep them engaged and to even have them have the hope that there is, you know, a good future so that they can stay fully engaged. You know, those are some of the things that I can cite, commercial challenges and people motivation challenges and the future, you know, the futuristic challenges of how do you know, give these people a substantive promise that yes, if you stay with us, this is what you know, this is what might happen in future. And so by so doing, have them on board fully mentally and have the mind and the heart engaged in the company.
In your leadership journey, because I can see it has been there even getting to where you are at, what are some of the things that you have enjoyed as a leader or being in your leadership role?
I think one of the things I really enjoyed, I think that's what I would highlight most, is seeing change happen and being part of it, seeing innovation happen. We are talking of challenges. Then we sit together with people and seeing how people apply themselves, make suggestions, and then, you know, there will be different suggestions from different people. And then we throw all this in a pot and actually we come up with a hybrid solution, or, you know, which is a mixture of many people's ideas, and that takes the company forward. So seeing just our ability to maintain our leadership through that, you know, strategic contribution of ideas from different sources, even from sometimes from people who are quite low in the organization, but because they are experts in their area, us, you know, taking their ideas, listening to them, and running with it. Number two, what I really enjoy is seeing people grow. So alongside the growth of the company is people's growth. You know, you see a new person come from the university, you hire them, and within a few years, you see the person is, you know, they get married, they have a family, and they grow. You hear they have even now established their home. You know, it's just seeing people grow from small to much bigger and taking responsibilities in the company. Somebody coming and within a few years, they become a manager and they become a leader by their own right. To me, that really excites me. It's just the same way, you know, you see you have a baby, a child, and you see them suckling. And before you know it, they are an adult. They are even able to argue with you, discuss, you know, difficult topics and have a position. To me, that growth is what excites me. And most important, that I can be able to contribute to that that I can be able to provide an environment where somebody is really able to grow, to utilize their capacity. That makes me excited because I think to me that the organization has provided that. I came in as a young person relatively 27 years ago, and I was given an environment where without looking at me, this is how the guy looks or whatever, but this is what the person has to offer. So we look at what the person has to offer, give them the room, and let them excel. In fact, now when I speak to a lot of my people, I say, just pursue excellence at your level, because I believe if all of us excel across the company, the summation will be a huge, huge mountain of excellence being contributed to by many people. So that the growth of the business, our ability to continuously resolve challenges, management challenges, and market challenges that we encounter, and still remain the leaders, and the growth of our people from the young people that we recruit to the mature people we see much later, it to me is very exciting.
Just even staying on that note of just the excitement that you have experienced as a leader, any memorable moments that have stuck with you in this leadership journey of yours?
Yeah, there will be, as I say, people, I have some people who have really, come up, and some of the times, you encounter challenges. Like if you have an external environmental issue that affects the team, or sometimes you have conflict within the team, and just you being able to work, to speak to the person or to the people involved, and work out together, or even challenge them. Some of the solutions you don't have as the leader. Challenge them and tell them, this is the situation that you have, and you can be able to sort it out. So when I see people get fully committed towards the course that we are pursuing, and we have added, like in the information area, it's not been very easy. We've even at some point had a cyber attack. And just the ability to bring the team to calm the people's nerves and everybody's. And at that point, actually, I must say that everybody is looking at you as the leader to say what is going to happen, what is going to be done, to provide the direction. And both people from above you and people from beside you and people from below you are looking at you, the backstops with you at that time. I think that's one of the most memorable moments I can have, because I can talk about, because it really challenged me. It challenged my mental stability. Just how do we get ourselves out of the quagmire? And by working with the people, by consulting and listening a lot, because you get people who come and tell you this is what you have to do. And also by using our networks, we were able to get the company back into operation. We were able to recover. Of course, we had precautions. We were able to recover our data, the most critical information that we could have lost, and it could have cost us a lot. We were able to recover that, and we were able to put the company back into operation. It wasn't as smooth as I may be putting it, but it was a moment which I still remember, because there were big questions. So what if we are not able to recover the data? What happens? And with everybody, and I saw how people are committed, the extra hours and sleepless nights they would work just to make sure that we do not lose our plot, and that our customers don't even feel the pressure. I must say, we managed it very, very well. Even to many of our customers, they may not know that happened because of the way we handled it. But we took a lot of heat internally. So that, to me, was an excellent example of leadership, not just from me, but from my colleagues in the executive team, even up to our chairman. It was quite a challenging moment.
Wow, I can just imagine that. As you say, it seems, the way you've explained it seems quite simple, but I can imagine during that time it was quite stressful. Yeah.
Okay. It is not something you would wish for anyone.
No. Yeah, cyber attack is quite something. Now, those are the challenges with technology now. Yeah? Right. Cyber attacks and all that. Okay. What has influenced your leadership development the most?
Yeah, I know that's a question I have expected from you. But I do not have anyone that I can mention, but I can mention a system. And I would say it is Google. To me, And when I talk about Google, I say Google is my teacher, because every time I have a personal challenge, I just go and type in, and out come so many suggestions of what I can do about it. So rather than cite one particular person in Google, of course, many people are contributing these. The system itself doesn't give the suggestions. Yeah, but I also, I can say listening. I don't read a lot, but I listen to books. I'm not able to look at the book so much, you know, but listening is my way of getting new information. And I listen to audiobooks on Audible. And, you know, those books, the one that I have listened to have really, really been useful to me. So as I develop myself, so they sort of determine a path that I have to follow as I develop myself as a leader. I think, you know, we have to develop ourselves mentally and physically. So, of course, I have a physical fitness program, but I also have a mental fitness program, which I follow alongside that, which helped me to address my needs for growth. I think all of us need to have a way that we are growing from every year. We are not where we started that year. Mentally, we are growing, we are taking in. And of course, as people say, what you take in is what you become. So I go to audiobooks and I listen to a lot of the books I've listened to on leadership, and also philosophical, sometimes, you know, philosophy. And I also listen to psychology. I'm very much interested in psychology, because it amazes me, you know, the mind, the human mind and the human behavior amazes me. And I am very much interested into understanding more and more, as much as I can, on how this happens and, you know, why we do what we do, or why we don't do what we don't do.
Yeah, it's true, being open. And like you, I've moved to audiobooks. You know, find it's easier for me to listen. Okay, so at least that we have something in common.
Yeah.
So as a leader, what are some of the things that you have avoided or disregarded to keep your leadership edge sharp?
I would say that the things I have avoided, and I even avoid some like a plague. First of all, I don't like to immerse myself into the politics of the land. I know that they are important. So I keep off a lot of political information. Yeah, I don't watch TV. I have avoided TV for the last many years. I only watch a few, you know, things, you know, documentaries and such. But my time for TV in a year is very, very little. So, and that has helped me, because it keeps my mind fresh. So the time I have, maybe I can listen to a book instead of going to listen to politics and that. So I avoid bad influence. So even the peer group pressure, even at an advanced age, peer group pressure still applies. That's what I believe. And if you're not careful, you can end up following the wrong direction or not doing the things that you would like to do, because you want to please a group of people. So I am a very independent person. I try to be very independent. And so to choose the way I spend my time, I think it's very, very important. And of course, to give priority. I'm not saying that I'm a negative person. You know, I do have friends, but, you know, I give them their attention, you know, accordingly. But I also allocate, you know, good time, and I filter what happens between me and those friendship groups. I think that's very important, and that's so I have to manage that, the influence, who is influencing me, what information am I taking in. And then, of course, I think the other thing I can say I've avoided is burnout, because that is a killer. I mean, you can overwork yourself, you know, and then you just get sick and you go down a vicious spiral of self-destruction. So I try to maintain myself. I take a break, you know, I take a holiday, you know, once in a while. And I want to enjoy life as well. So if you can enjoy life, you can be more productive. That's what I feel.
George, thank you for talking about burnout. Just unpack that a little more, because I think many CEOs like you feel the pressure of performing, you know, from all sides, and they get burnout and it affects their health. Just speak a bit more on that. How have you managed, or how are you managing now, even as the CEO of your company?
I think for burnout, what I could say is that sometimes it comes from belief so much in my capabilities or in one's capabilities. It's like you are the one making things move. You are the one doing everything, but which is not true. So by just realizing that I'm a mortal like everybody else, and I have got a fixed number of hours, and I have a body and a spirit to take care of, that suggests that I have to maintain, you know, we maintain everything else, including the car. And I have to also maintain my body, you know, and the mind, so that I can be able to make the contribution I make to the company. I can be able to listen to the other people. I have to reduce my risk of burnout, because I think burnout can really finish us. Eh? So by just doing what my level best in what I'm doing without taking too much. So I try and maintain a very clean working desk. I'm not a friend of paper at all. You know, paper will come to my desk, and our contract with paper is it comes and it must leave as fast as possible. Otherwise, I will destroy it. So I try and maintain a very clean working environment. And also not to overwork, don't work too long hours. So a very clear plan, even on how to manage my emails. So it's not a pressure. My target, you know, like for emails is by the time I close, like today, I should have very, very few emails unread in my box, because if I leave them, they will surely be waiting for me on Monday. And that will stress me even during the weekend, or end up having me working over the weekend. It's a very tough call, because as you say that, as we speak now, they are still pouring in, and somebody has to deal with them. So, yeah, but I think burnout is manageable. One, first of all, by accepting that you are not a superhuman, and being able to delegate as much as you can. That has actually been one of my key tools, delegation. But of course, you know, to delegate, you have to develop the person or the people you are delegating to. And this ties up in my earlier comment about people and development of them, because the more you develop the people, the more hungry they become for responsibility. And so they provide a ground for you to empower them with more responsibilities. And that enables you to delegate.
Well said. And it's very important, you know, managing that so that you don't burn out and not be able to deliver your role. If you are to look back at some of your moments you've gone through, which one can you say has been your lowest?
Yeah, I think the one I talked about, the time of our information challenge, I think that would be the one of the ones I can talk about. Often, you know, sometimes also when we have to part with a colleague, sometimes it may have to happen, you know, for various reasons. You know, it's sometimes it's painful. And, you know, so I would say when we have to part with colleagues and managing such, especially the situation where the team is not working in cohesion, and then you are the leader. Because you now, then I blame myself, you know, maybe what I'm seeing is a reflection of my weakness in the team. So I have had situations, you know, in the past where my team was not working exactly in alignment, or there was a conflict between a few of the members, and I had to manage that. And even, you know, situations where we had to say bye-bye to some of the people. And you will agree with me, especially if people you have worked with for quite a number of years, it's not an easy task. You know, you question yourself. Yeah.
Even in those moments, and generally as a leader, what are the things that have inspired you to continue leading?
I get inspired. In fact, one of the questions people ask me, some people now ask me, is how can you be in one company for 27 years? Of course, I'm not the longest serving staff here. There are people who have worked longer than me, even by more than 10 years in the company. But I always say it's because I find an alignment of the corporate values, corporate core values, with my own values. So it is not difficult for me to come to work. It's very easy for me to come to work because I don't have to struggle. It's not like trying to fit a round peg into a square hole or a square hole into a round peg. No, I think I have a complete alignment of values, my personal values, because if you sum up integrity, quality, and Arturo Petro, you get one of my personal values, which is excellence. That's what I think. So to me, I enjoy participating in that and seeing also the things that we are doing, the services and solutions that we are providing are good for the people. When you equip a borehole or when you provide a solution to clean water that could not have been drunk before and people can now drink it and remain healthy, you feel happy about that. So I'm happy with what we are doing. I'm happy with how we are doing it. I'm happy to be here.
No, yeah, and it's amazing. And I was very excited when you agreed to come and name the company that you serve. It's a company that I've seen it throughout my life, you know, and I've always wondered and even felt the impact of it directly or indirectly. So it's really good to see the things that you are engaged in and now being at the helm of that. Yeah. If you're to restart as a leader again, if you're to restart your leadership journey again, what would you do differently?
To be honest with you, it's very easy for somebody to answer that question by saying, oh yeah, I would do this, I would do the other. I just feel that I have had a good journey of learning and adaptation. What I believe is that if I was to restart again, maybe the challenges that I have faced in this journey would be different. I would have to face new challenges. So still, it's not that it would be very predictable now because I know what I have gone through. So, and it's easy, hindsight is a good teacher, but hindsight only tells you about the past. It doesn't tell you about the future. So I like the journey I have been on. I think I would do many of the things I have done, the decisions I have made, I would make them in the same way. And hopefully in the environment I would evaluate and be street smart as I feel, you know, with the help of all the environment and people around me, I have been, and I would end up hopefully in a similar situation where I'm happy with the outcome. So that's how I would answer that question.
If you had to use an image or a metaphor or a symbol or a picture, your leadership role, what would that be?
Yeah, if I was to use an image, I would actually say my leadership is a leader as a sculptor. I'm aware of Michelangelo's quote that says, in every stone, there is a sculpture inside. And the task of the sculptor is to get that sculpture out of the rock. So people, different people given the rock will get a different sculpture. They will do it differently. And that is the same thing for us individuals. We are ourselves. We will not, I don't try to be another person. I try to be the best version of myself. And that is the way in this rock, that is my life. That is the way I can come up with the best sculpture that I can carve out of what I have been given.
Wow, that's a really good illustration and imagery you painted.
Yeah.
In terms of, I know you say you listen to books, you read and all that. In terms of the best advice you've ever received, what would you say that is?
Yeah, I will talk about one of it. It comes from the chairman that reads our company. And it's basically the golden rule that treat everybody else the way you would like to be, or you would be happy to be treated. I really buy into that. It's the golden rule of life, as you know. How simple life would be, how nice the world would be if we are all able to do that. So as I look at people who I'm working with, people who are reporting to me, as I look at the customers and our suppliers, if I'm able to apply that, it would make my life and my productivity and everybody's productivity much better. So I think that's a good piece of advice. And the second one I would say is actually a quote I'll have is from a book titled Rare Leadership, RARE, Rare Leadership. It's by Marcus Werner and Jim Wilder. And they talk about rare leadership. R is remain relational. That is your relationship with the people. And then the A is act like yourself. Don't try to be somebody else. And I talk about it, be the best version of what you can be, of the person you can be. And the second R is return to joy. In the book, they say everybody you meet, if your employee, even your child, your wife, your spouse, your in-laws, everybody, what they seek most is joy. The human mind is designed to seek joy. So in the relationship, the way you conduct that relationships, are you providing joy for the other person? Are you providing an environment in which they can actually achieve that joy? Because if you are able to provide that, then they will cooperate with you. They'll probably do the same for you. So, and then the last E is endure hardship. It tells us life will not always be easy. Endure hardship well is the last E. So Rare, R-A-R-E, to me, it was a small book, but I found it very, very informing and challenging, because all those things I've said are not easy to achieve. Remaining relational, acting like yourself. You know, we like to copy others and we like to envy others what they are achieving. Returning to joy. We annoy other people and we upset and we sometimes focus on our own interests more than we do for others. And of course, hardship. We don't want to deal with difficult things. We would like to run away from them. But you know, if a situation comes, we have to deal with it. Thank you.
I love that acronym, and you so well describe that. That's definitely some good advice. Some good advice. In terms of, I know you said you like to empower people and just the rare leadership, the things that you're talking about. But if somebody was to ask you specifically, what is your leadership approach and style? What would be your response?
I'm a progressive leader. That's what I desire to be, and that's what I feel I am. A progressive leader is not satisfied with the status quo. They look at how things are happening and how can they happen better. The experiences that they are going through, they and other people in the team, how can those experiences be better tomorrow? And if you remember our values, I talked about continuous improvement. That is all about progress. And if we look at the other two values of integrity and quality, progress coupled with quality, then that's how we grow. So I think to me, that's what it was interesting when I hear you asking this question, because that it just brings to me the issue of progressive leadership is what I would most likely identify myself to. Of course, that means you've got to have innovation. You've got to listen to other people. You've got to be in a sort of absorbent mode to catch ideas from other people. And to be ready to experiment and to fail, because not every time that you try things and experiments, they will work in your favor. Yeah, and to take the risk, but also take responsibility for the outcome. If you don't succeed, I take the responsibility for that and not blame everyone else for failures and take credit for the successes to myself. So I think that is what I would say about my style.
How has being a leader affected your personality?
Yeah, I think it has helped me better understand myself. You know, what are my strengths? What are my weaknesses? And to me, that has been very valuable. So even as I say I have to develop myself, I would say, leadership has shown me that one of the areas I have had to work on in the past is my assertiveness skills. And to me, that is very, very important, has been very important to be able to understand other people from their position and to be able to give people my suggestion, my contribution in a very objective manner. And so basically to pursue, I would not say I'm an expert or excellent in it, to pursue emotional intelligence in my engagement with other people. So a lot of the people I mentor, this is one of the first doses of that I give to them, the one on assertiveness, because I feel it's very, very crucial for you to be able to foster an environment where discussion and business can continue, even if there are differences in opinion, and even if there will not be an agreement at the end, even if it's a disagreement, that disagreement be in a healthy and humane manner. So to me, that leadership has really challenged me, in that way, because sometimes, I may encounter a situation where I say, why is this person not appreciating my position? It seems like it's obvious, you know, why can they not just get it? But when I reflect on myself, maybe I'm also not getting something from the other person, or maybe the questions that I'm asking are not communicating. They are not being well understood from the other end. So how can I communicate in the easiest and simplest manner to my discussant on the other end, so that we are talking in a healthy manner? And even if we are not agreeing, we are disagreeing in a healthy manner. To me, that is the what I would say leadership has really helped me to grow in that area. And I'm happy that, you know, I've not reached the Holy Grail, but that I am aware is an area that I need to continue developing as I go on.
Looking at the future and you making your legacy, you're creating your legacy, what do you want the legacy to be?
Yeah, I think I would wish to see a place where our people understand the values of the organization, and they are fully committed to those values. Because I think, to me, that is the bottom line. If people can understand the values and they are committed to them, and they are committed not just by word of mouth, but by action, they put their mind and heart into delivering around our purpose. To me, that is what I would say is a good legacy. It's a soft legacy, very difficult to identify or to show this is where it is, but it can be seen in the results of the business, can be seen in our customer, the feedback we get from the customers, can be seen in the joy that our people have in doing the job that they do, and the growth that they achieve as they do that, and the joy of our stakeholders, and even in the growth of the business itself, and the fact that the business pursues excellence in many ways, in terms of quality, in terms of compliance, and in terms of many of the obligations that many other businesses may not be giving priority. That is, at the end of the day, we have a vision to go across Africa. And so I would like to say that, you know, in my time, I contributed to the building of the footprint in many parts of Africa. And perhaps, you know, it may not be complete in my time, but, you know, I have made a contribution toward that. From where we started, we have made some steps towards that and made some progress. That's what would be really a good legacy, if I can be asked.
Thank you so much, George. And finally, you know, we've had your story, your journey. So what is the moral of your leadership story? What lessons would you want us to get from your story?
I would say that the lesson and the moral is three words. It is possible. That's what I would say. I believe that a good life is a result of the small good things we do day by day. They add up. It's very difficult for you to sit and see the whole picture of yourself 20 years from now, or, you know, if somebody is 20, 40 or 30 years from now. But if I can be able to do what I'm doing today well, if I can do good things today and I do good things tomorrow and I do good things day after tomorrow, surely there will be a good life at the end of the day. That's what I believe. So it is possible. I may be in a difficult situation, but, you know, they believe that it is possible. And the doing of good small things that can help me get out of that situation is what enables me to get out of the situation. If I look back at my life, I think that's the way I can summarize it. It hasn't been all skiing and smooth, but I have tried. Whenever the situation came up, I've tried to accept it, to accept my mortality and my limitations, and then say what has to be done to manage this situation, and then do small good things towards that. And I think that is what has brought me where I am today. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much, George. Any final thoughts or words to say before we say goodbye?
Yeah, I think I can say it's a good to have this chance. It's good to reflect on one's leadership skills. And, you know, certainly this discussion has helped in that. I would like to thank you for organizing it. And I'd like to thank you in sharing, helping us, you know, share these ideas across Africa, you know, and with other leaders, because I believe that we have good people in Africa, very, very good people. We have a good place as well. We may not agree in many ways. We may compare ourselves with the other world and say they are better than us, but we have good resources and we have a good place. If we can develop it, and if we can have leadership, because you know, somebody said that everything rises and falls on leadership. And so a lot of the challenges that we have in our area, in our African continent, I think I would attribute it to our leadership, the commitment that we have, our leaders have given to solving these problems. And if we can develop, you know, this sort of engagement that you are working on can help us to develop people who have integrity, leaders who have integrity, and leaders who have a genuine commitment to see a better Africa tomorrow. And they place that above their own selfish interests. I think, you know, we can do it. I think we can then, at the end of the day, say it is possible even for Africa. Thank you very much.
And I can say, if I was in a church, I would say amen to that, George. Thank you so much for concluding so well for us today. I wish you all the best, and I continue to just cheer you on and look at your progression as you grow as the CEO of your company. Thank you for coming.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us in today's podcast. We hope you're leaving with insights that will help you live and lead better. We appreciate our sponsors, BNG Consultants Limited and BNG Center for Leadership Coaching, for keeping us on air. Bye for now. See you in our next episode.